Dobro pozdravat to Soviet vending machine. My name is Dan Morin. I'm joined by Jason Snell for this new show where we, hot on the heels of our NASA vending machine, we discuss what it's like to live on the other side over in Russia. Hi, Jason.
Privyet, Dan.
Privyet.
I worked on that. It is Star City. Yeah, we are here on the other side talking about not For All Mankind, but about Star City, the For All Mankind spinoff.
Ah.
Really exciting. New ground for us, and yet familiar.
Yeah, familiar ground, yes, indeed.
It is. So this episode is going to be about episode one. Now, Apple TV is dropping episode one and two on the same day for a little mini binge. We'll do an episode about episode two, but not this one. This is about episode
one. Just in
case. So if you're a slow binger and you're spreading it out, this is about episode one. And then you can go watch episode two, and we'll talk about that in our next episode, probably, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. We're figuring it out. It's a new show. We don't know.
It's a whole different world.
Oh. But what's that sound? Oh, it's a loud knocking on my door.
Yep. Well, I hope you know. I hope you aren't in the middle of sleeping or anything like that.
Nothing says Soviet Union like men knocking hard on your door in the middle of the night.
I think this is a brilliant opening to this show because it is a mirror to the beginning of For All Mankind. And even though it happens basically contemporaneously with that first episode, the way they film it is so different, right? Presents such a contrast, right? In America, it's on TV. Everybody is watching.
Right.
You know, the whole world is paying attention. Everybody knows it's going to happen. In the Soviet Union, at least in Star City, the wife of the cosmonaut landing on the moon is dragged off in the middle of the night into mission control, where she is shown the video, which is very funny.
She thinks, in turn, that Alexei Leonov, a real historical figure, she thinks Alexei did something that the secret police are going to get them and do something terrible to her or to him. She says, we're good workers. Alexei would never
do anything. Yes, right.
And then she's put into mission control, and she sees the chief designer, and she's like, did something happen to him? He's training, you know, did something happen to him? And only then does he say, oh no, he's not training. He's on the moon right now.
I like that because it's even set up. She's like, oh, he's going to the moon.
Going to the moon.
And she's like, he's going to the moon? When is he going to be there? And now.
Yeah, he's getting off the... And this is how she finds out, which is, so it's the completely locked down. I love this opening scene. I love the terror of the people knocking on the doors. I love that they take her outside in the dark into those old cars.
Cars, yep.
That's just like, that's such a great Cold War kind of, that's the moment where I was like, put this show right in my veins. I love this. This is amazing.
And it's got that classic, I am sure a little bit tropish, but the filming is grainy and everything is drab and monochrome.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's being shot in like the... you know, the 70s or 80s, right? Like, it's got that Cold War vibe. This is, you're on the other side of the Iron Curtain.
Right.
Everything is cloudy and gray. It's and colorless.
In For All Mankind, they shot Star City in Bulgaria. I believe this show is shot in Lithuania, the exteriors anyway. But there, you know, you got to get some good Soviet block architecture. That's what you're going for.
Oh, it hits that perfectly. So we're introduced to the chief designer played by Reese Ivens.
Ivens. I mean, he's Welsh.
My Welsh pronunciation, not great.
Reese Ivens. I've got a little background here. I actually read a book about, Sergei Korolev. So Sergei Korolev is his name, and I'm going to call him Korolev throughout this podcast, even though they call him chief designer. But this is the true story. So, like, it's referenced here, and the producers have mentioned it about For All Mankind. The point of divergence in the show from reality is that, in reality, the chief designer of the Soviet space program died of heart disease complication during a surgery. Like, there's all of this, but he died in, like, 1963, I want to say, something like that. And in the early 60s. So what they say is he lived. And that's how the Soviet space program continues on and gets to the moon first, is they're basically saying the premise is, what if Sergei Korolev lived? Now, nobody calls him Korolev.
Yeah.
Basically, it's a state secret, his identity. And the story goes that many, maybe not all, but many of the cosmonauts didn't know his real name until he died. Because they kept him a secret, because he is too valuable to the Soviet Union not to, you know, they worried that the Americans would kill him or kidnap him or whatever.
Yeah. And so perhaps convince him to defect. Even.
Exactly. So we will see him referred to throughout, just as he was and for all mankind, as the chief designer. But it is also Sergei Korolev is his name. But they did this. This is actually true. I had wondered about this.
Okay. I was not as much aware. I knew that Korolev, we have talked about that in For All Mankind, that was the divergence point.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize that it's exactly he was supposed to be that same historical figure. But it's very...
Yeah. I think it's... I mean, they've talked about it, so it's strongly implied. But the point is nobody uses his name. And in fact, I think he's... I forget what what Korolev's... middle name is, it's obviously
Pavlovich.
Call him SP. So they said they called him SP sometimes, which is again not his name. He wrote scientific papers as like K Sergeyevich, right? Mm-hmm. Like inverted
sure.
his name.
Yep.
But he was a secret. He's a state secret. And so putting Rhys Ivins at the center of this show, I think is just, he's a really interesting actor. And this is a really interesting character because he is trying to navigate. He is an asset of the Soviet Union, irreplaceable. But he's also just a cog in the wheels of the Soviet Union. And that comes out in this episode.
Yeah.
Where he's like, I have big dreams. And they're like, no.
I was looking at the Wikipedia page for him at one point, and they reference him saying, you know, meeting the cosmonauts and saying, sit down, my little eagles, which is something that we hear him refer to the cosmonauts as.
Yeah.
He is a great sort of, I don't want to say inscrutable, but enigmatic character that we meet in this episode. I love this bit, you know, pretty early on, right? They land on the moon. Everybody's so excited. There's going to be a parade.
Yeah, there's
a
newsreel.
He gets a medal in an empty room.
It's so good.
And then on his way out, they're like, also leave the medal here. You can't wear it out. Because...
Yeah, you can't you got to take the medal off. You got to give me back the thing we handed you with the medal, with the certificate and all of that. There's nobody here but your wife and the functionaries.
My like Soviet conspiracy brain was, we only have one medal, but we pass it around. Nobody gets to keep it. But also, I mean, yes.
Some people do get to keep it, but this guy is off the books. He is meant to be invisible. But also, like, this is the guy who put together them beating the U.S. in the space race. And the first thing he says is basically, we need to go on. We need to go to Venus and to Mars. And they're like, nope. Just make a moon base. And he's like, but the moon base is kind of dumb. And they're like, we don't care. Moon base. And he's like, all right, fine. Like, you immediately get the sense that, like, he's a genius and they love having his genius, but, like, they're going to tell him where he needs to go.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think there's a few other things that sort of come out in this episode. We have our KGB contingent led by Colonel Roskova. Ludmila Roskova.
Ludmila, yes. And Maxwell Martin.
Yes, playing a very terrifying, as I feel like she's really good at doing, is she's like sort of inscrutable in here. Like this character, she never sort of telegraphs what's going on in her head. She's got that terrifying, like very pleasant to you at most of the time, but also just, you don't want to think too much about what's lying behind their head. And we meet a pair of our For All Mankind characters that we'll know later on.
Yeah. So first off, it's late to the typing pool on her first day. It's Irina Morozova, who obviously is the scary character from For All Mankind, who has run Star City at one point and all of that. But here she's it's her first day on the job. What is she typing? She's typing the transcripts of bugged conversations of the cosmonauts.
Yeah, and she is, new here, and she's got a a sort of friend slash rival in the typing pool who is trying to make her way up in the ranks by, oh, I found some critical detail that casts aspersions on basically the cosmonaut who's going to be the first woman to land on the moon. And Irina is concerned that maybe that's not right. She overhears something. Basically, we learn that of a couple of the other cosmonauts, we have Sasha Polivanov and Valya Markelova, who are two of our cosmonaut like stars. And Sasha is having an affair with Valya's wife, who is Tanya. And she is during one of their trysts, Irina overhears something, basically a detail about this Yana, who's this other cosmonaut, who has basically had her loyalties questioned because there is someone, she is claimed to not have a brother, or that her brother is dead, but there is a brother or a person with that name who is working for one of the underground newspapers. So, of course, the KGB is hauling her in and trying to get her to confess to this. And then Irina later hears a detail during this tryst that essentially cast doubt on those accusations.
Right. This is the complexity of this is her, this episode is that her frenemy in the typing pool, and they're like kind of rooting for these people that they're spying on, which is also interesting. She's like, oh, my girl, she's going to be the first woman on the moon. And you know, Rena's not happy because she says she's a glorified secretary, but it ends up being this, I mean, it's tragedy, right? She was going to see her brother before the launch. He writes for an underground magazine. And this leads to her being this cosmonaut who's going to be the first one on the moon being taken in for questioning. She insists that he's dead. They insist that he's not. They make her admit that she did see him. And Irina,
Siberia, basically.
Yeah. And Irina has the exculpatory information and follows it, right? She follows it to the cemetery to find out that this is her brother died as a baby. Which leads to, I mean, we're jumping ahead, but we can jump around here, which leads to that moment where, I mean, she says, oh yeah, Ludmilla is like, well, you're very promising. I think you did good investigatory work here. Although she points out, you know, you're listening to Sasha and you didn't report that he's having sex with other people's wives. Your job is to write down everything you hear, and she gives her that whole "I smell privilege on you" and all of that. But she's like, "Come with me. We will fix this mistake." Well, how do they fix the mistake, Dan? They fix the mistake by killing her, because she says, "We never make a mistake.
We do not arrest the innocent, comrade." Oh, is what she says, which is a hell of a line.
But Irina won't shoot her, so Ludmilla shoots her.
Yeah.
Which is that moment of like, you kind of failed her first test of being a tougher KGB type person than she. She's from Ludmilla's perspective, which I don't want to spend a lot of time on because it's scary over there. She's like, this person is very promising in terms of her mind, in terms of her investigation skill. But where we have to work on her is that she's not willing to just shoot a person, an innocent person, and kill them. But, you know, give her time, I guess.
Yeah. There's I find it interesting to see a couple of our characters who are what they strive for, right? Because we have several characters who strive essentially to, you know, kind of reach a pinnacle of success, but they measure that success in different ways. Because I think there are some characters in this who are like, I want to get out, or I want to get so, like, achieve so much that I can essentially like write my own ticket and escape this terrible like society that I'm living in. And I think Irina is very much someone who's like, I need to survive and thrive here, and I'm going to do that by basically trying to work the system, like get as high up in this system as I can so that I have power, so that I can't, you know, I can sort of protect myself.
Right.
Because the other detail that we learn about Irina here, which we did not, I think, know unless it was maybe alluded to in passing in For All Mankind, is that she has a daughter.
Yeah, yeah. She has a child.
We don't know where the father of this child is. We don't know, you know, if she's widowed or, I mean, I imagine, I don't think divorce is really
I don't know.
I don't recall.
It's something that's just laid out there. So we learned that about her. I wanted to mention a couple other details in this thread. Her frenemy, whatever, like when she's like, oh, I have more information. I think that this thing is wrong. And like her friend's already gotten like a commendation for her for getting this information and leading to a confession. And so the friend's response is not, oh no, we did something wrong. Well, let's fix it. It's like, oh, you'd like that, wouldn't you? You'd make me retract my report. It's very clearly like
you'll move up. I won't.
Living in a police state, everyone is paranoid and it's every person for themselves. And that's why she's not her friend, right? Like that's the bottom line here. I also really like the technique of having them listen to the tape and then us also seeing the scene that they're listening to, which happens with Sasha and one of his, you know, his girlfriend, not wife, someone else's wife, where it kind of goes back and forth between her listening to their intimate moments and their conversation and also seeing their intimate moments and conversation. I thought that was really, it's a very Lives of Others kind of thing about like, this is a surveillance state. This is how it works. It's the people who are listening and the people being listened to for sure.
Yeah. There's another thread that is sort of dangled here too, which is Ludmilla reveals to the chief designer that basically the Americans have some of the Soviet schematics.
Yeah, for the moon base.
And so there is a mole somewhere, and we don't really get too much into that in this episode, but that, you know, again, it's kind of hanging over everything that there is some leak somewhere in here. We also have a scene where the designer collapses. And we see him, you know, getting medical attention, and he's watching TV and watching Wernher von Braun talk.
Yeah, it's actors from For All Mankind in that scene, which is interesting.
I couldn't tell if they reshot it or they just sort of like ran a bit from the
For All Mankind
through. Yeah,
that I wasn't sure either, but it sure looks like they're replaying bits of For All Mankind season one in that. Yeah. Little bit. Yeah, he because what happens is they tell him that they're going to replace the woman who is going to get shot in the head,
Yana
with Belikova, who is new and doesn't really know what she's doing. And they're like, you know, we told Gagarin at the last minute, and he's like, Belikova is no Gagarin. And Lumilla's like, what do you mean? She's a party member. And he's like, that doesn't mean anything. What are you even talking about? And she's like, well, you got to do it. And he's like, okay, all right. Because it's all secret. And they give her a speech to read that's written for her. That's what she needs to do.
Marxist-Leninist way of life.
Yeah. Exactly. But this is, so Korolev collapses. And so he's watching TV and he's seeing those characters. And this is that line of dialogue about the point of divergence, which is that surgery saved your life but put a strain on your heart. So it's this idea that he survived. And I do really like that since he is Korolev historically and this character in this show are a mirror of Wernher von Braun, right? They worked on ballistic missiles for the military, and then they aspired to explore space. I love that he's in bed watching this, and he's like, look at him, that Nazi.
He celebrated
as a savior, and here I am hiding like a coward while they destroy someone else's life, Jana's life in this case. They don't trust me. They refuse my counsel. They deny my plans. And now they come for one of my eagles and I do nothing. So this is our moment of the chief designer being like, I'm so unappreciated.
Right. He has got his goal, and his goal is exploration of space.
Yeah.
And he is towing the line, but he is clearly not a... If he is not a good party member, then he is at least, you know, making lip service to it, but he doesn't actually believe in much of that, it seems like.
I should say, one of the reasons that Korolev is such an interesting character, and I think that it feeds into this, and we'll probably hear more about this at some point. If not, at least viewers, you can read this into it. Like, why does he say all of this about, celebrate as a savior, but they're destroying other lives, they don't trust me, they don't listen to me. Another thing to know about Korolev is that when he was younger, he was put in a gulag under trumped up charges. Nothing that he did, but they put him in a work camp, a Stalinist work camp, for like, I don't know how many years it was, years. And then they released him and he went back to work. And so this Korolev we're seeing now, he has been a victim of the state. He's not just an underappreciated cog in the wheels of the Soviet machinery who also happens to be a state secret. He is a victim, like a serious 3 years in Siberia kind of victim of the Soviet state. And I think that's important to think about that aspect to him too, that he's complicated, right? Like I feel like von Braun is actually a little bit like this too. It's the like, these people, if I do kind of what they want, they will give me what I want. And that is sort of like what he has to navigate, just as von Braun navigates it with the Americans, the chief designer is navigating it with his own people here.
Yeah. And just in case you were worried that because this is a spinoff set in, you know, predominantly in and around Star City, obviously, that we wouldn't have space, terrible space things happening. Don't worry.
We do.
It's still a For All Mankind show.
It starts with a poor cosmonaut whose parachute doesn't open. And so poor Sasha smacks into the ground at full speed, except, it's a dummy. Because again, Belikova was nervous and all of that, but she gets down there and then Sasha just crashes to the ground, except Sasha's fine. They just put a dummy in to make, like, as a prank. Anyway, that's really unpleasant. Sasha is unpleasant to her because basically he recognizes she doesn't know what she's doing. They're in a sim and he's like, "You don't belong here. Don't ever say Yana's name."
I think that's Valya, actually.
Valya? Okay.
Yeah, because that's who she actually ends up going up with, Valya.
Oh, no, that's right. That's right. It's not Sasha. It's Valya. Yeah, so it's like you don't... So she's in a really hostile environment, this woman who's supposed to be the first woman on the moon. And
you're like, you just do what I tell you. I'm gonna basically fly this mission entirely by myself. You just, you know, try not to die, basically.
Yeah, press the buttons I tell you to press. Never say her name.
But it leads us to this great moment where they're up there and she, the whole point is they're landing a woman on the moon. And so she has to get in the lander. And in order to do that, she has to go outside.
Yeah.
And so she goes sort of hand over hand. And then, of course, there's a problem with her suit. The CO2 scrubbers are not working. And so she's starting to basically get, I think it's essentially like hypoxia or something.
Yeah, it's CO2. Yes, basically. She's not getting enough oxygen.
So she's trying to get there. She can't go back. She doesn't have enough time because they'll miss the window, etc. And so we get these moments where, first of all, she's got to basically like jump or like throw herself over to the lander. And she's got to be able to vent her suit. The only thing they come up with, which is come up with by our good friend, Sergei Nikolov, who's also a For All Mankind character.
Yes. Young engineer who we will see again in For All Mankind.
Yeah. Suggests, well, the only thing she could do is puncture her suit because that will vent all the CO2 and also all the air, obviously, but maybe otherwise she's just dead. So this way she might have a chance.
But she's got an air supply, maybe a little bit of oxygen she'll still have, and then she'll also have to...
Yeah, so she's got to pull off the antenna from the dish or whatever and use it to stab a hole through her suit, but hopefully also not through herself.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a real For All Mankind kind of vibe here, right? Like, so she does it, and then in the moment that I thought was really great is like, there's no time to tether, you just have to go. So like, if you miss, you just float in space and die. But if you need to go, if you wait, you also die. And she almost misses, but she does get the hatch open and survives.
And lives to walk on the moon, where she botches her carefully practiced speech.
Yeah.
And then decides to go off script, which results in them cutting the audio feed from her from Mission Control because she is saying things that are not on, have not been approved by the party.
Exactly. Including mentioning Yana, who is, who has been killed. Right. She doesn't know that, but like she's mentioning her colleagues and all of that.
But it gets her a little credit with Valya, I think, who is... was so upset about Yana not being the one to be there.
I will say I actually really there's an earlier scene that we didn't mention where they have the a tradition, a cosmonaut tradition, is
oh yeah,
is pissing on the back tire of the of
right,
the transport.
Gagarin did it.
Because Gagarin did it. And so they offer her like a can and she just squats.
Yeah. Yep.
And I thought, maybe you're underestimating this woman. Folks.
Yeah. No, I really this character is a fascinating character.
Right?
I really enjoy Belikova. Her because she yep. has yeah, Belikova, she's got again, she is, like you said, she is a party member. Her father, I gather, I think was suggested to be basically a kind of important figure of some kind. And so, you know, she is kind of viewed, I think, in some ways as like a Nepo baby, right? Like, you know, like, oh, you're here because you're such a good party
member and all yeah. of that. Whereas the other one was the one we liked and now she's gone.
And was qualified because she was here to, because she was like, wanted to be a pilot, wanted to be a cosmonaut, etc. So, just an interesting character. I've come around on all the, like, I came in not knowing who any of these characters were and I felt like they did a good job of kind of explaining them because we've got, you know, Valya, who's kind of the loyal one, but his wife is cheating on him with his best friend, Sasha. Yeah. Sasha's kind of an oaf, but is, you know, I think maybe there's more going on there, but
maybe.
He's a bit of a jerk. Yeah. And then Anastasia,
certainly
who is, yeah, who is our kind of novice in this, and they all have sort of interesting dynamics
yeah.
happening here.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got Valikova, who is the first woman on the moon, and this is a character that was mentioned in the first season of For All Mankind as well. It's the prompt for getting women into the space program on the U.S. side, is that they do this. So she becomes famous, world famous. But what, you know, we now have an idea of some of the tragedy that underscores it, which is, I think, what the show is all about, is like there's more to it than all of that. And then the big, like the way it ends, the way it ends is that Irina comes home. We see that she's got a daughter, which is interesting. And she's also still got blood spatters on her clothing from yeah. the murder in the cell by Ludmilla of the other cosmonaut. And
and again, the vibe I really took away from that was like her success, I think, in no small part is because I think she is in a position where she is clearly the caretaker, right? She comes home. There's a
seems like it's like just her.
Yeah, like has a, you know, babysitter essentially
yeah.
watching the daughter, and it's like I feel like the vibe I got from her is that she realizes like, okay, I need to look out for my daughter, and that means I need to like basically navigate this hierarchy and get to a position of some power and or authority to the point where I can protect myself and my daughter.
Yeah. 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 So we can see now Irina. I mean, in some ways, this show feels like it is the Irina origin story show.
Yeah.
We know what she rises to be. We also know about Sergei, and there's a collection of interesting cosmonauts that we're going to meet. But like, there are some key factors here in Irina, and the fact that Ludmilla is basically obviously going to be her mentor and enabler yeah. as she makes some difficult trades, I think. Knowing what we know about how cold and calculated Irina seems in For All Mankind,
yeah,
I think it's very clear that she's going to be, you know, making some very difficult decisions about doing some stuff that she's not comfortable with
to get to where she needs to
in
go
in order to get ahead and
yeah.
and for her and her daughter. Yeah.
And such a, what's kind of interesting too, I think, as opposed to For All Mankind, is that this show really exists along this fundamental tension line between, because we have our, you know, Rhys Ivins and Anna Maxwell Martin as our sort of two leads, and they are representing essentially the science and the state.
Yeah.
And those two are in tension with one another because they need each other, but they also are not perfectly aligned in what they want. And so we see Ludmilla and the chief kind of, you know, they work together, but they are also not always on the same page. And ultimately, it seems like what the state wants, right, the state gets. When they want to cut the feed from Anastasia, they cut the feed. So that's good, but that's going to be a tension because we know that the chief designer wants things that the state does not want.
Right. And so how do you, you know, either build up enough credibility to get what you want to happen or manipulate the state in some way to get what you want. And that's the game that he's playing. No, really interesting. putting, you know, so Soviet, Cold War Soviet intrigue is what the show is definitely about, in addition to the journeys of these characters.
Yeah, because the space stuff is here, but I feel like not quite as front and center in some ways. It's more of a backdrop to some parts of this.
Yeah.
And it's the lives of the people. I mean, and that's true in For All Mankind and to a certain extent as well. But I think, I feel like they also wanted this show to not just feel like Russian For All Mankind, right? Like it's got the just enough of the flavor to make you like recognize the world, but it's also doing something different because of the fact that the Soviet Union is such a different place, definitely in this point. And I don't know, we've talked about this, but I don't think it's really known at this point. Like, you know, how long is this spinoff envisioned to go?
Right. Would is it a miniseries? Is it a multi-season thing? Is it what
would
is
they
their...
do time jumps, or would they just sort of continue
the one
with
thing
that story?
I think that's the one thing that I have heard them say, which is that they don't intend for this show to do time jumps, that they really think,
I think
it's
it
about
makes more sense.
This period, the early space race period from the Soviet point of view.
Yeah, I think that makes sense given, you know, what they've invested in these characters and this setting. Like, the problem is For All Mankind, you know, you exceed that setting fairly quickly, right? And so you lose some of that vibe, you know, if you go too far and make too many time jumps. And it gets a little more, you know, science fiction-y, as For All Mankind did, as opposed to historical fiction, whereas this feels much more rooted in this moment.
That's what they want to give us, so. All right, let's take a break there, and we will be back with another episode. Again, Apple will drop them both simultaneously, so if you're listening on the day, you know, just if you already blasted ahead to episode two, you can blast ahead to our next episode. But we are going to end our talk about episode one right now, and until our next episode when we talk about episode two of Star City. Until then, do svidaniya, Dan.
Do svidaniya, Jason.